Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
I know I've been big on the Disney Plus bandwagon, but they've got me suckered in.
How's that?
Well, I'm watching that show, The Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah.
I told you about that one, didn't I?
Yeah. That was the whole reason you got it, was just so you could see that series, right?
Yeah, one of the main reasons. Have you watched it yet?
No, we do have it. Sydney Riley signed up for it.
Right. Well, I'm sure you all had it. I mean, I knew you all would get it.
But we have never logged into it.
Really?
Riley probably has, but yeah. We haven't logged into it yet. We've been very busy with a lot of other stuff, though. But we're hoping to someday get in. That does look like a good series. I've seen some preview somewhere on something.
Well, it's really good. It doesn't really remind you of a Star Wars show. I mean, it is a Star Wars show, but it's almost kind of like a Western.
Yeah.
In its appeal.
Yeah.
So
I always liked Westerns.
To give you a little bit of background about it, The Mandalorian, Boba Fett, if you remember Boba Fett from the original trilogy.
I remember Boba Fett. We first met him in the Star Wars bar, didn't we?
No, he was at first at Empire Strikes Back whenever they were trying to get bounty hunters to go find Han Solo.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't in the original one.
I always had that argument over who shot first under the table.
Oh, with Greedo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to get on that topic. because on the new Disney Plus, they've actually changed it again, so they shoot at the same time.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's whatever.
The original Han shot first.
Well, he did. And he should have. That's Han's character.
Yeah, that's right. Shoot first, ask questions later.
Exactly. Doesn't ask questions. Speaking of Westerns, too, there's that show Justified that was on TV, too.
I haven't gotten to see that, but the previews look real good.
There's this one little trailer for that show, and he's sitting there in a bar, very reminiscent of Star Wars, and he says to the guy who he's about to apprehend, talking about Han shooting first and that whole thing. And it kind of cuts right as he draws his gun, so it's kind of, they're trying to play off that. He's like Han Solo, PG-13 kind of character.
I want to watch that Justified.
But now Boba Fett, now I'll give you a bit of Star Wars nerd logic here.
Yeah, I'm not a real
aficionado. He was actually not Mandalorian.
He was not.
No, but he wore Mandalorian armor.
Okay.
So that's his look is a Mandalorian armor. And my understanding is the protagonist in the new Mandalorian series is not Mandalorian either, but he wears Mandalorian armor as well.
Well, it seems like anybody can get Mandalorian armor. There is no requirements.
Well, you have to get this weird stamped metal to make it out of, too, which they show you in the first episode. It's kind of interesting. Hmm. But anyway, what he is a bounty hunter, just like Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And his name is Mando.
Mando. Well, that's...
kind of his nickname, I guess.
I guess that's kind of... obvious.
Have
Mandalorian,
you heard,
Mando.
And one of his first life forms that he's out to capture is what people have called Baby Yoda.
Oh, I've seen this thing about Baby Yoda, but I didn't know what it was.
Oh, it's from that show. And it is every bit as adorable and awesome as you might think it is.
I was wondering where Baby Yoda came from.
Yeah, but it's actually not Yoda. At least, I don't think it is.
I heard somebody was very disappointed with Baby Yoda because they said that, that they always pictured that Yoda... was at one time looking kind of like a normal person, but that after you've been alive for 1,000 years, because wasn't he supposed to have been around for like 1,000 years?
Yeah.
That he probably wore down and kind of got a green glow to him or whatever, that he was a person, but 1,000 years will wear your ass down.
No, this Baby Yoda, I don't know how you could be disappointed in that, because Baby Yoda is as cute as all get out.
Well, yeah, but, if your idea was that he started off looking like a person and wore down to this, well, if you're born that way, that blows your whole theory.
I guess so. But I still like the cuteness. I don't care.
Cute Yoda.
So, since this is a... talking about bounty hunters and things like that, I thought it'd be kind of a fun episode to do about bounty hunters and bail and bonds and that kind of stuff, because we've never really
talked about bail
bonds and bonds and bails and bounty hunters and bonds and
savings
bails
bonds.
They're not savings bonds.
Oh, okay.
They're the kinds of bonds you get whenever you have a court hearing or appearances.
That was always one of those cheap gifts that your uncle or somebody that didn't really wasn't too invested in you as a kid would give you. Here's a savings bond.
Yeah, savings bond?
Yeah. Here's a savings bond. I paid $5 for it. If you hold on to it for 30 years, you'll get $50.
I bet if you had a bunch of them right now that you got 30 years ago, you'd be pretty happy, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, but and the ones that I got from my cheap relatives, I've cashed all those in. Those went a long time ago. Those were in the early years of marriage. You know, once your Sears money runs out and everything, then you got to buy something. Then
once your Sears
cash
money.
Cash your bonds, yeah. That's where you outfitted your house was from Sears, pretty much. Because they had all the, you know, low-cost stuff. And they gave everybody a Sears card. Back in my day, when you first started out, everybody went and got a Sears card because they gave them to everybody. They gave them out like Pez.
Here's your Sears card.
Yeah.
Way to go.
And you have a $500 limit, and that $500 limit, 2 weeks later, could I have raise my credit limit? That $500 is gone.
Sure. 30% interest. No problem.
Yeah. JCPenney was only slightly a cut above. They were a little bit more discerning, but not much.
I've never had a Sears card.
Well, it's because you came along in an era after Sears was doing well.
Yeah. I had a Discover.
They were just selling tools by the time you came along.
I had a Discover card, and I think they were somehow related to Sears.
Maybe so. I think they did have Discover, like, kiosk inside of Sears or something like that. I don't know.
Maybe that was my version of the Sears card.
Well, maybe they didn't have Sears cards anymore. They switched to Discover. They went into that jointly or something, and they helped guided you towards that.
But I think they always did that. Well, if you'd like to apply for a Sears card today, we'll give you 10% off this purchase.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. I'm good.
And it's only 30% interest APR.
So when you think of bounty hunters, do you have any classic bounty hunters that come to mind from movies or TV shows?
Well, not counting Star Wars. Then the only other one that I was really familiar with, and I never watched the show, but I always heard that Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah.
That one. Now, there was some other group that was like a family that went around, or were they repo people? I don't know. I was thinking there was a family that went around doing bounty work or something.
I figure it would have been some sort of Western character, knowing how much you like Westerns.
Well, there were various bounty hunters, I guess, here and there, but I don't recall any right offhand. But I've been around for a long time, so that might have something to do with it.
So I Googled what the average salary is for a bounty hunter.
Yeah?
What do you think the average salary for a bounty hunter in the United States is?
Well, my guess would be probably about $100,000. If I hadn't read another article about one that was a famous one, and their annual salary is only about $30,000 or $40,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, according to Google, it's $79,259.
Well, that's pretty good. Pretty good payday.
Not too shabby.
But you got a lot of travel. It depends on if your expenses are covered. If your expenses aren't covered, you probably are putting out half of that.
That's true. So, in order to become a bounty hunter, there's actually a study.com has a step-by-step guide on how to become a bounty hunter. And a lot of it depends on, this is again something that's regulated by states. There's different West Virginia code or regulatory agencies which prescribe who can be a bounty hunter. And so there may be some licensure involved. You may have to take a class, pass a background check, and you may actually have to carry a firearm as well as part of your duties as being a bounty hunter.
If I were a bounty hunter, I would want to carry a firearm.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I don't think that everyone is going to be happy to see you.
So what a bounty hunter does, do you know what a bounty hunter does?
They go and they get people that have skipped bail.
Right.
They've left, and so you're rounding them up so that somebody else doesn't lose all their money.
So whenever someone is arrested for some sort of crime, they are generally brought in front of a judge to make their first appearance or their arraignment or things like that. And what will happen is the judge will set some sort of bail or bond, and that will ensure the person comes back to court. Because otherwise...
Hopefully.
So they may set the bond at, say, $10,000. We'll give you a $10,000 bond to make sure you appear for court at the next hearing.
Right.
So a lot of times what people will do is they don't have $10,000 laying around, but they may have $1,000, or depending on, it varies state by state, maybe they have $1,000, which would be 10%.
All right.
Or would that be 10% of a... Yes. 1,000, right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. Check the math there.
Because 10 times 1,000 is 10,000. It's 1/10.
It's been a long day. So...
It's all right. I used to be a mathlete.
So what the person will do is, or one of the relatives will do, is they'll take $1,000 and they'll go to a bail bondsman and say, they'll give them the 10%, and then essentially the bond person will insure the rest of the $10,000 for them mm-hmm. to come to court. So the person will get out and generally
probably leave the town.
Well, generally the bondsman keeps that $1,000. That's a fee. They right. don't, you don't get that back. Mm-hmm. That's not like a deposit. That's just your fee for paying them. Mm-hmm. And if they don't show up for court, then basically the bond person can lose that $10,000. So they have an incentive to want to bring people back when they don't show up for court.
All right. Now, is the person that put up the bond in any way liable for that? Or if you get him to do it, that $1,000 is all you're out. And if that guy disappears on his $10,000, can you go back against him?
No, because the bonding agency is the surety that it's against.
So it's just like buying insurance. It's like you're buying a $10,000 insurance policy and it costs you $1,000, basically.
Correct. It does not go back against the person who paid it.
That's now, news to me.
Now, the bonding agency will probably, whoever paid it, will go to the person who put up the money and say, hey, you need to figure this out. Now,
well, yeah, but do they have any actual recourse?
Well, you know, there could be some sort of subrogation type thing they sign whenever they do this agreement. That's not anything I've ever dealt with because I don't really deal with in that that part of it. But if allowed by law, that might not be a bad idea for a bond company to have the person who posts that $1,000 to say, well, if they don't show up, then I promise to pay you back the $9,000 or give them some other kind of security interest.
Right. Yeah, that just seems strange to me because if I could put up $1,000 and the guy skipped town and I'm not responsible for the other $10,000, okay, it might be a good bet. Let him go. Now, sorry, bail bondsman, you're on your own.
There are some other ways people can be on the hook for helping people get out, and I want to tell you about those. But before that, I think we have possibly a motion to post haste bond before the court.
Well, if it pleases your bounty ship, we'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, who do we have on the docket?
We have our good friends at Sleep Number.
We all know sleep is important.
I'll say.
What makes you thankful for a restful night's sleep, thus allowing you to conquer your daily tasks?
Well, what makes me thankful for it?
Yeah.
Well, what makes me thankful for it is the way I feel the next morning when I'm rested and refreshed and ready to face the day.
And the holiday season is here. And how do you thrive during the holiday season?
How do I thrive on good rest from sleeping on a good mattress?
How do you balance sleep, holiday planning, and making time to purchase the perfect holiday gift for the special people in your life?
I didn't know this was a test, but you do that by being rested and ready to go and taking a lot of notes. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed helps everyone get the proven quality sleep that will change their life. That's what all my answers were leading up to.
Pretty much. Sleep Number has individual fit technology, and you can only find that at a Sleep Number store. Please go visit a Sleep Number store to explore the science behind the bed.
Discover comfort for you and your partner.
You'll visually see your body's pressure points react to a Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed.
And if you'd like to check out the video, it's at www.sleepnumber.com/store/store-experience.
You can watch the video and check it out. The Sleep Number bed allows you to adjust on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support.
Mmm, that's firm. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably through the night. Just like it does for Dak Prescott. Have you seen him in their commercials on TV?
I have.
And he's my fantasy quarterback. I love to watch him sleep because if he gets a good night's sleep, I'll get a good score.
He's my backup fantasy quarterback.
Well, you need to put him in.
Discover proven quality sleep with the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed from $999 only at Sleep Number store near you or sleepnumber.com/court.
That's a Sleep Number store near you or sleepnumber.com/court. Mike and Tommy say, nighty night, little buckaroos.
And this
I didn't know what they said.
And this is no way endorsed, but So does Dax.
Dak. It's not Dak Shepard.
Oh, and so does Dak.
Dak Prescott.
He's just D. Prescott on my lineup. So one way that people can be on the hook when somebody skips bond is there's a different way you can get somebody out of jail here. And that is basically posting a property surety for someone. So if someone's in jail, and again, the judge sets the bond at $10,000, the person has family who owns property. They can go and get an attestation from the clerk saying that the property is worth at least $10,000.
An attestation?
That's right.
Is that like, what do you call it when they come out and look at your house? And
affidavit, basically?
Yeah.
An appraisal? Well,
an appraisal, yeah.
Similar to that. It kind of encompasses all those things.
Appraisal. It was another A word. I was trying to think of that.
And they can take that to the clerk, and then in lieu of actually placing money, they can essentially bet their house that the person will show up and place their house on there.
Thus the saying, bet the house.
Pretty much. I don't know if that's where it comes from.
It sounds like it. You know, if I got to know a guy that's a felon or a supposed felon, I'm not betting my house on him.
Well, it happens a lot. And I have seen people get stung by people not showing up.
Can you believe that when people do that to family members?
Oh,
like your mom and dad put up their house to get you out on bail and you skip bail and they could lose their house? That just shows you're guilty right there.
It's pretty bad. So I've actually seen it happen.
That's a crime against nature, let alone man's law.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, that's a different kind of bond. That's like called a property bond.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way people get out. But the way the process works is, you know, the reason you have a bond or a bail is not to punish somebody or because they're guilty or anything like that. The sole reason you have it is to make sure the person will show up for their future court appearance.
So they have incentive to show back up.
Right. A lot of times you'll see people, and I am guilty of doing this, of reading Facebook comments under news articles, but there'll be something about where somebody is charged with a crime here locally. And the judge heard the case or whatever and set their bond at a certain amount.
Right.
And people will say, oh, that's ridiculous. How could it be set for that much? This judge is horrible. I can't believe that they only set it for that. And it always cracks me up because there'll be one lone voice of reason in there that'll say, well, actually, it's just to make sure they show up. They're innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
And they just get downvoted into oblivion. You know, people don't want to hear that.
It's, like, it's got nothing to do with the actual crime. It's got more to do with their thought process as far as them being a flight risk, doesn't it?
It does. And there's other criteria they look at, too. And it can have a little bit to do with the crime. If it's a capital case, then people are actually not entitled to have any kind of bond.
Yeah. So, or if they're like hold like passport and citizenship in other countries and have a lot of money or something like that.
Right. Well,
you don't want to let them out of your clutches.
Right. And that's how you kind of determine whether or not they are a flight risk or whether or not they're going to show up for court.
Yeah. But if the guy has been born and raised and spent his entire life here and never left the state, probably he's not going to run off to, you know, Mexico or something.
Probably not. And some places actually have extradition and they will bring people back.
Yeah.
To give you an actual technical definition, bail is a set of pretrial restrictions that are imposed on a suspect to ensure that they comply with the judicial process. Bail is the conditional release of a defendant with a promise to appear in court when required.
Okay.
Some countries, like the United States, the bail usually implies a bail bond, which is somebody, like we said, like a bonds person.
Mm-hmm.
And it could also be some sort of property like we talked about as well. If the person does not return to court when they are supposed to, the bail would be forfeit. And the person could actually, and I didn't touch on this earlier, but there actually could be a new charge for failing to appear. That's a crime in and of itself. And that can be a felony in a lot of cases.
Well, sure.
So
if you don't show up for your court date, it's not just that you forfeit your bond. You still have to answer for what you did.
Exactly. So by not showing up, you are really shooting yourself in the foot.
You're piling on the charges.
You are. You're not going to make it get any better. Now, in some countries like the United Kingdom, bail is more likely to consist of a set of restrictions that the person has to abide by for kind of a short period of time. It doesn't have to do as much with money. So here in the U.S., we're more about the almighty dollar and how it has to deal with money.
Really?
Yeah.
So, but sometimes can you be released on bond but have to stay like under home confinement or something?
There are, and that'll be certain restrictions that might apply. And the judge might think that you need that to make sure you don't think about going anywhere else. Or if it's some sort of crime where the judge has concerns that you might commit another crime, they might want you on home confinement to make sure that you don't commit another crime, that you're walking the straight and narrow.
Or go near, like, if it was a domestic dispute with an ex or something like that, so that you can't leave your house and go further domestic abuse.
Correct. Or restrict your use of firearms or having firearms in the house, yeah. Things like that.
Yeah.
There are certain minor things where a person is actually not arrested if it's kind of a minor misdemeanor. Whenever the infraction takes place, the police might just issue them a summons to appear. So that might be an instance where there's a criminal charge where there's actually not even a bond posted at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, you know, you have something kind of small that you've done. You get essentially a ticket which says, hey, come to court on this date.
And sometimes they release you on your own recognizance.
Right. And that's something kind of different, too, I'm going to get into.
And that's a big word.
It is. The severity of the crime is something that's kind of taken into account as well. For a minor crime, nobody thinks anybody's going to be stupid enough not to show up for court and get in more trouble by not appearing for a small crime. For a larger crime, when you are facing possibly a harsher penalty, jumping off to Mexico or somewhere like that might seem like a better idea rather than facing the music.
Well, even if it's a small crime, a lot of people are stupid enough. It's been my experience in life. There are a lot of stupid people out there.
That is true. But the important thing you have to remember about bail, and this is something that the Facebook comment section just doesn't quite get, is that people are innocent until proven guilty. And they don't have to sit in jail waiting for trial because as they sit there right now, they're still innocent.
Supposedly.
Contrary to what people believe, and including, I guess, you, they are innocent until proven guilty.
Well, that's what they'd like you to think.
That's part of my standard.
Allegedly.
That's part of my standard opening for my criminal cases. I always talk about the great American way we have and how people are innocent until proven guilty. And it's, you know, America, red, white, and blue, apple pie, innocent until proven guilty.
Any of the jury members go, blah, blah, blah.
Innocent until proven guilty. Did I say that? Let me say it one more time.
Well, you lawyers must read different things the rest of it, because I have never read the Facebook pages over notes about somebody that got arrested or bonded or whatever else. I've never seen that in my life.
Oh, I do all the time because I'm always curious. I mean,
that must be a lawyer thing.
Well, let's see what these knuckleheads say about this now. It's like, oh, the person's accused of involuntary manslaughter. Let's see. The bond's low. Oh, boy.
I read different knuckleheads.
We actually, in the United States, have a constitutional right not to have excessive bail.
But right. We went over that in that one, didn't we?
We did. But the right to bail is actually even older than the Constitution itself.
Oh.
Bail law came to the United States through English tradition and laws, much like most of our jurisprudence. And as I said, even before the U.S. Constitution, there was the Judiciary Act in 1789, which guaranteed a right to bail in all non-capital cases. So like I said, non-capital cases.
That's you reserve the right to bail when you go out on a blind date, don't you?
That's right. I guess so. Sometimes you have to pull the parachute and get out of there.
Wait a minute. My phone's ringing. What? Oh, this is emergency. I've got to go. See ya.
That reminded me of that movie, Bruce Willis' Blind Date.
Oh, yeah?
That was pretty funny. Whenever the holiday season comes around, I always want to watch Bruce Willis movies.
Yeah.
Like Die Hard.
When you think of Bruce Willis, you think of Christmas, huh?
I do.
Okay.
I think of throwing terrorists out of the Nakatomi Tower Plaza. Now, anyone charged with a capital offense where death is a possible punishment, bail was discretionary depending on the offense. Now, when the Constitution came into play, the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution provides that excessive bail shall not be required. And the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled, though, that the Constitution permits holding a defendant without bail pending a criminal trial. There is no absolute right to bail, but if there is going to be bail, it has to be reasonable. It cannot be excessive.
Hmm.
But people are generally...
But that's in the eye of the beholder.
That is true. People are generally entitled to a reasonable bail, though. Now, as you were saying, there are some different terms that can be applied. One of which might be, and this is a pretty common one we have in this area, is that they have to provide clean drug screens while they are out on bail.
Sure.
Because it seems kind of counterintuitive to the court to allow somebody to be breaking the law while they're out on bail by using drugs.
Yeah, that's probably not a good plan.
Yeah, not a good plan. It doesn't give you a much incentive to think this person's going to be showing up for court either.
That's right.
So if they're using illegal drugs, they're probably not making the best decisions to begin with.
This is true.
Some of the other ones, like you mentioned, to maybe stay away from certain people, especially if there's some sort of domestic or assault or battery or type situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
To possibly stay in your house if the court's concerned that you might commit a crime again or run afoul of the law. And again, like the main one that I see a lot is provide drug screens. They could also order you to report to the probation department or something like that once a month, just kind of check in and make sure you're not doing anything inappropriate or staying close. They also oftentimes will tell you not to leave the state, to say, hey, we're gonna give you a bond, but don't leave the state.
And especially don't leave the country.
Yeah. One of the interesting things here is that since we're in a tri-state area, a lot of times people do cross state lines, especially in some of the more rural areas where they have to go like to Louisa, Kentucky from down in southern Wayne County or something like that, because that's where all the stores are.
So you'll just have to get somebody to run errands for you.
Well, they're pretty lenient about that. But what they usually do is they have the person sign what's called a waiver of extradition. And this is usually signed about the same time the person is given a bond.
Oh, that says that you won't fight. If you get picked up in another state, you got to come.
Essentially, yeah. That's what it says.
Hmm.
It's kind of silly to fight extradition anyway, because the really only defense you have to not being extradited is that you are not the person who they say you are. In my experience, it's 99.9% time the person who you say you are. And the court, wherever you are awaiting extradition, they don't care if you did it or not. It's not they don't really care at all. They just want you to get back to where you're supposed to be.
Well, that one guy we talked about on that one episode, he'd do that. He'd say, I'm the living man. I'm not Carl Jones. That's a fiction that you developed. I am the living man. You cannot capture the living man.
Okay, living man. You can stay in jail. Get your three hots and a cot.
Hey, of course, the court can impose like a monitoring device. Can the bail bondsman make you wear a monitoring device so that you don't take off and cost them the other $9,000?
They could, if you would agree to it, I guess.
Well, I mean, I guess they could make that a condition of them insuring the rest of the bond, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do they do that? Do you know?
You know, I've never seen it around here. I think I have heard of it in other places, though. It would seem to make kind of sense to me if you think somebody's you're going to do a bond for them, but you are pretty sure they are going to run. you might want to have that.
I'm pretty tight with my money, so if I were going to run a bail bonds place like that, I would put one of those neck things on like they had in, what was it, The Running Man?
Yeah.
With Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then if they ran out of the area, it would just blow up and blow their head off. That's what I would do to make sure they didn't leave and I got my money.
I think if it was up to me about getting out of jail and putting one of those on my neck or staying in jail,
yeah,
I'd probably just stay in jail, I think.
Well, that's problem solved. That's me, you know. I'm a problem solver.
So you're innocent sitting in jail, but because you don't want to have a bomb strapped to your neck, you should stay in jail.
Allegedly innocent.
No. There is no allegedly innocent. You are innocent.
They wouldn't have arrested you didn't do it. And if you didn't do that, you probably did something else.
You have it backwards. You are 100% innocent. You are allegedly guilty. So they're alleging you're guilty, but you are innocent until proven such.
You can tell you're one of them liberal lawyers. That's what I'm going to put on my Facebook notes.
Yeah. No, I'm just an American who abides by the Constitution.
Oh, yeah. Wrap yourself in the Constitution. Go hide behind that.
I will. If that doesn't work, I'll grab a flag. But you would be surprised. People will say or do just about anything to try to get out of jail because they're so intent on
getting out. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
They, especially people, and again, with the drug epidemic we have going on, people who are coming off drugs and things like that will do anything to get out of jail. Just let me out of jail. Let me out of jail. I'll go to rehab. Please put your house up. I swear I won't go anywhere. I got to get out of jail. This place is horrible. I got to get out of jail. Seems to be the common theme. And again, they make bad decisions. I've seen people run off and actually cause relatives to lose their house.
I can just see the guy there. Now, Your Honor, if I had known jail was going to be like that, I wouldn't have done what I done. But I didn't know it was that bad. Now that I know, I promise you I won't do it no more. That should be good enough. If you had educated me, you guys need to get out there in the community and educate us about how bad jail is. Then we wouldn't want to go there.
Well, I'll just go ahead and tell you right now, jail is not good. Actually, most people enjoy prison more than they like jail.
I don't think I want either.
Well, in prison, you seem to get more, it's less crowded, you have more rights, and I think it's a bit more structured. When you're in jail, they just jam people in there because they're awaiting trial.
Right.
So, you know, then again, that's why we need probably more options for people to make reasonable bond or bail, because we're footing the bill to incarcerate people who are essentially innocent awaiting trial.
Well, I don't want to get shanked, so I'd rather not go, because they'll shank you.
Or shiv you, depending on...
Or shiv you.
Yeah.
Shivved and shanked.
So to determine whether or not the court is going to give you a bond or a bail, the court does look at certain things. They want to, like you said, they want to know if you're a flight risk. Basically, will you show up for court or not? Are you a danger to the community? One other thing you didn't mention, do you have substantial ties to the community?
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody who has a lot of family around is probably less likely to run away.
Or owns a lot of businesses or something.
Yeah. The court will look at the nature of the current charges, the length of the sentence you would serve if you were found guilty. If you're facing life in prison, then maybe it makes...
You got nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose, yeah. Whether it's highly likely you will be convicted, given the strength of the evidence, which the court looks at that a little bit, but that's not weighed quite as much, because you're not really having a trial in the merits when you're talking about the getting a bond or getting released. Your past record of showing up for court appearances. So if you have been in trouble with the law before, but you always showed up for court, that can actually be something that's in your favor. Whereas if you have had trouble before and you got charged with a failure to appear, you didn't show up for court, that's going to cut against you. They're probably not going to want to let you out again because they think you might just not show up for court again.
I can understand that reasoning.
Whether or not you have the financial resources to leave town. We talked about that one lawyer who was charged with defrauding the Social Security system.
Yeah.
Eric Kahn.
Right.
He had millions and millions and millions of dollars, and he had...
From defrauding the government.
And he fled and was found, I think, in Ecuador or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in South America.
And he was brought back. I think he was found a Pizza Hut in Ecuador.
Yeah, they did. He went into a Pizza Hut. I guess he couldn't adjust to eating the native food.
The native, fresh, delicious food that's found everywhere.
He had to get a Pizza Hut. They hung out at McDonald's and Pizza Hut and caught him at Pizza Hut.
Again, the strength of your family in the area and your community ties. Your age. Somebody who is younger and has more family around might not be as apt to leave. Someone who's a little bit older and has less family might think, well, there's no sense in sticking around. So if you have a job, you don't want to lose it. You might stick around more. Your reputation in the community for being reliable. If you do have a job and your boss shows up and says, well, you know what? He is always here for work, rain or snow. He's always here.
Except for when he's out stabbing people.
That's right.
Then he's not here then, but he usually does that on his lunch break.
So the court might take that into account. And your history of substance abuse and treatment. So somebody who is a really bad drug addict is probably not going to be let out as much because they're not going to be as reliable and they're not going to be making the decisions that they should be.
I find that drug addicts are not very reliable and they're probably not very truthful either, allegedly.
Nah, that's actually true. There's no allegedly about that one. That's true. Now, something you had mentioned earlier that we haven't talked about yet is an OR bond or...
Own recognizance.
Or a PR bond, which is your personal recognizance. And that means that you just signed something and you promise to show up. So that is...
Hey, I'm going to watch over me and I'm going to make sure I do what I say I'm going to do.
That is the gold standard of bonds. If you can get that for your client, you're doing a good job. Because people don't like to put money down to get out. They just want to basically sign themselves out.
What if you were traveling incognito and they released you on your own recognizance, you might not know who you are. So you wouldn't have to watch yourself very close.
Probably not.
There's a brain twister for you.
A lot of times, though, you're not going to see OR bonds on things such as major felonies. Anything that carries a pretty substantial amount of time in prison, you're probably not going to get an OR
bond. It's more like the white collar ones, huh?
Well, not even that. It just depends. if it's something that's going to be multiple years in prison, then you're probably not going to get an OR bond. Now, they will do it sometimes at the preliminary hearing, like in the magistrate court. They'll give somebody an OR bond in lieu for, like, exchange for basically waiving their preliminary hearing. But once you get to the actual circuit court where it's a felony, you're probably not going to get an OR or a PR bond. It's just they just don't do it, which is kind of interesting because federal court, people actually don't have to bond as much in federal court. People are just kind of presumed to, they're going to show up for court.
Well, the feds know where we all are.
Well, and they'll
come get you.
They have larger jurisdiction too.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry as much whether you're in Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, whatever. You're still under the jurisdiction of the federal government. So
yeah. Unless you're a sovereign citizen.
Yes, unless you're a sovereign citizen. Unless you file the proper paperwork.
And that flag is a pirate's flag.
Unless you file the proper paperwork, which I can supply to you for only $19.99.
$99.99. Make something off of it. If they're that dumb, jack up the price.
I've seen a couple websites like that. I have a former client who got something offline like that and filed something like that without consulting me.
Well, I'd just say that, you know, if you're that damn dumb, you deserve it.
One interesting thing I saw in the news is there was recently a lawsuit in Harris County, Texas, which is the Houston area.
Uh-huh.
And it was regarding excessive amounts of bail being set for people who are really only facing misdemeanor charges. And the federal lawsuit found that what it was doing is it's keeping poor people in jail because they couldn't afford these. So there are these relatively minor crimes with these high bonds set. People are sitting in jail. And one of the things that can happen is that if I am a prosecuting attorney and I charge somebody with, say, criminal trespass, and it carries at most 6 months to be imprisoned.
Right.
Or 6 months in jail, which is a misdemeanor. And we go for the preliminary hearing and you ask for a bond. And I say, and the judge says, no, I'm not going to give you a bond. I'm going to make it $5,000, or I'm going to give you a bond. I'll make it $5,000. Mm-hmm. But you're destitute. You don't have $500 to go give somebody. So you sit in jail while we're awaiting trial. Well, the court system moves pretty quick in criminal cases, but still not that quick.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 4.5-5 months in, and we come to the pretrial. And the prosecuting attorney says, tell you what I'll do. You plead no contest to this. I'll go ahead and let you out for time served. Who wouldn't want to do that?
Sure.
Because, I mean, you're essentially going to be getting out right then.
Right.
So what if I plead guilty to this? I'm getting out right now.
Yeah, it's not worth going through the extended...
No. Do I want to spend another day in jail? No.
Yeah.
So a lot of times what happens is people are sitting there so long and they're not getting out even though they're innocent.
That they just plead to stuff rather than fight it.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it ain't fair.
No, it's not fair. But as an attorney, if I represent somebody that's in that situation and I've been trying to get them out and trying to get them out and trying to get them out and they keep getting denied, then we get to a point where it doesn't make much sense for them to stay in jail when they could plead out to something and just get out now.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do it?
Just like the West Memphis Three.
Yeah.
That's what they did. They went ahead and pled out because they offered them a deal. Said, you go ahead and enter your offered plea and say you're guilty, though, and then you can get out.
Now, the agreement in that federal lawsuit in Harris County, they came to an agreement that nearly all misdemeanor defendants would be released on personal recognizance bonds that require no money to be paid, and usually within a few hours of being taken into custody. So they'll come in, they'll be presented quickly to some sort of magistrate
for assessment,
and they'll let them out. People facing certain type of misdemeanors, which include domestic violence and a second or subsequent driving while intoxicated charge, wouldn't be automatically released and would have to appear in front of a magistrate judge to get some other kind of bond or some other requirements, like, for example, stay away from somebody or impound a car or don't drive or something like that.
Take their license.
But it's more of kind of an automated type system for these smaller crimes.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of reform in the country for this because it's an area that has a lot of discretion with judges and it's ripe for abuse.
You know what I would guess based on another episode that we did? That in that area, they had private jails.
Yeah.
Because then you've give them the high bond and they can't get out. So that's putting more people in jail. And so then the jail makes money and they give that judge or whoever a kickback on it.
It could be that. I mean, there are definitely people out there that would do things like that. And I think there's been examples of that.
Oh, yeah. We read about some during that episode.
But there could be other people that do this, because if you go in front of this judge and they look at your record and they say, well, you've been convicted of 10 misdemeanors and 2 felonies. You know, I'm going to set your bond.
That's a full house.
Yeah, that's a full house. I'm going to give you a bond of $10,000, and, you know, they can't make it.
Yeah.
They're essentially, and maybe this time, though, they didn't do it. Essentially, what they're doing is they're being held.
They did it.
They're being held as if they were guilty because of their prior acts. And prior acts are not allowable under 404B evidence.
But where there's smoke, there's fire.
Well, and unfortunately, you're probably right about that. But in our country, they're innocent until proven guilty. So that's the deal.
Damn, the legal stuff.
Well, and it can snowball, too. Like I said, say somebody has a prior conviction, and they get a high bond because of that. They end up sitting in jail for a long time. It gets close to trial time. They get a good plea offer. It says, we'll let you out now if you just plead to it. So they go ahead and plead to it. Next thing you know, they got 2 or 3 situations like that.
Yeah.
It could be a person who's just like a drunk or an addict, and they're for public intoxication, or
yeah, some of them are out on bond on one thing and they do the same thing again or something else again.
Yeah, and that's one of the things they look at too whenever they're giving somebody a bond, is to make sure you don't break the law again. And that's almost one certain way to get your bond revoked. Now, here in West Virginia too, we have this interesting thing. It's called a bail piece. So if you are a bonds person and you have done that whole, somebody's paid you $1,000 on a $10,000 bond and they've gotten the person out, then what you can do is you can file what's called a bail piece with the court and say, look, I don't trust this person anymore. I want you to come and bring him back in, because I don't think they're going to show up for court. And essentially what you're doing is you're revoking their bond because you're the one who's guaranteeing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that with a bonds person, or if say you own a house and you put your house up and you have a relative who's still out there using drugs and getting ready to get in trouble again, and you don't like what they're doing, you can go file that bail piece with the court, and essentially that'll revoke their bond.
Well, surely you have to give back whatever they gave you, because otherwise you take the money, then turn around and try to get their bail revoked to minimize your risk.
I think that with the bonds people, I don't know what the criteria is for that. They might get a portion of it back, but they certainly don't get all of it back. There's no way. But I do know with people who have put up property, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter if they don't have to pay any penalty or anything like that. The person just gets basically put back in jail.
Yeah.
I saw one time where that was actually abused. I had a client who was not the swiftest, and someone had put up their property for her and got her out. And then essentially wanted her to behave in a certain kind of way, and she wouldn't do it.
Oh.
And so then they filed a bail piece, and she went back into jail. It was really bad.
Well, I think there's laws against what that person probably wanted her to behave a certain way.
Well, I'd say
if I'm reading you right.
I'd say so, too. So, I mean, it's kind of a very shady individual.
You can't do that. Yeah. So,
I was one of the really bad ways I saw that whole bail piece used to hold over somebody's head.
Yeah.
So, but
I would think so. Well, I looked through on your bounty hunter stuff.
Yeah.
And most states have, you have to become licensed or registered with the state to be a bounty hunter.
That seems fairly reasonable.
West Virginia falls in that category.
Are you a registered bounty hunter in West Virginia?
I am not, but I am now thinking about it. That would be fun. I might like that. I used to be a repo man, and that's, I kind of liken it to a repo man. You're repossessing people instead of cars, though.
You're in kind of the gray area of the law.
Yeah. I travel in the outer regions of the law. I am the law. I'd be like Sylvester Stallone. But so we're in that group that requires that. Now, there's another group that allows fugitive recovery but does not have any licensing. And it's like California's in that one. And then they have states that allow fugitive recovery, but not the title of bounty hunter. You cannot refer to yourself as a bounty hunter in these 4 states. Arkansas, Florida, Ohio, and Texas. It's against the law. So don't call yourself a bounty hunter if you're in those states.
You're a recovery agent.
That's right. And states without a private bail system or fugitive recovery, they don't have it. You can't do it. Illinois, Kentucky, Oregon, and Wisconsin.
There's no private bail system there?
No private bail system or fugitive recovery.
Hmm.
So I don't know what you do there. I guess you just sit in jail. I don't know. Or you have to deal with the government to do it, maybe. I don't know.
Well, somebody can put up their property probably for it. Or they can give them OR bonds. So
I thought that was interesting that they've fallen those different ones.
That is.
And the other thing I looked up was five famous bounty hunters.
All right. Well, the dog's got to be on there.
Well, actually, he's not.
Really?
Yeah. And I'd really only heard of one of these guys. The first one was John of the Priests.
I do not know John of the Priests.
The 1709 Penal Act doesn't describe what the Penal Act was, and I'm not going to look it up.
Yeah, be careful.
I would imagine I'd get a whole lot of responses on Google.
Careful with those keystrokes.
I Googled the Penal Act, and woo, baby. It demanded that all Catholic priests take the oath of abjuration and recognize the Protestant Queen as supreme head of the Church of England and Ireland. Any cleric who refused was sentenced to death. John Maloney was arrested as a horse thief in Castlebar, Ireland, in the early 1700s. He was offered a choice, hang or become a priest hunter. This sounds like a movie, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
He chose the latter. A talented rogue, John excelled at clergy hunting. Well, they're not very fast. Most of them are old, and they're in those long roads, which does not suitable to running. So I don't think that's a big thing to hang your hat on. He's a hell of a clergy hunter.
What's that? What's that smell? Is that incense? There's one near.
Now I'm incensed. So he was a talented rogue, and John excelled at clergy hunting. He was paid about £100 for the capture of an archbishop or bishop. So they count extra if they yeah. have the big funny hats on.
Yeah.
His favorite method of ensnaring priests.
I don't know if I want to hear this.
Was to feign a deathbed confession, then pull out a concealed weapon and do the holy man in. So I would have them go fetch him. I'm dying. I want to give my confession. And then when the priest would show up for it, then he'd slip a knife in them while they're bent over and he's whispering in their ear or something.
That's pretty bad.
I'd say this guy had to have gone to hell, wouldn't you think?
I would say so.
Maloney was fatally stabbed in the act of killing the last remaining Catholic priest in his parish. His body was thrown into a lake by local Catholics. John's body was eventually retrieved and buried in an unconsecrated ground nearby. There is a tree near the spot, which local legend says has grown, but has never blossomed since.
Hmm.
So there, they killed him, buried him twice, once at sea and once in the ground.
Well, it sounds like he had a penchant for murder. They just said, hey, you know what?
Well, they were going to hang him.
Yeah.
So given a choice, I guess I'm going to go kill priests. Thomas Tate Tobin was the next one. In 1863, three Mexican national cousins, the Espinosas, went on a killing spree, murdering more than 30 English Americans in the San Luis Valley, Colorado, in retaliation for relatives killed in the Mexican-American War. When the authorities failed to capture these men, wanted dead or alive, they called in renowned adventurer, tracker, trapper, and mountain guide, U.S. Army Scout Tom Tobin. Tobin was given 15 men to assist him, but he went out alone instead because he was just that badass.
That sounds like a movie, too.
Upon returning, he was asked how his trip went. Tobin is said to have replied, so-so, before throwing down a sack which contained the severed heads of all three Espinosas.
Ew.
He found it, brought him back in. Said dead or alive.
It did. It didn't say in intact.
Now, this one you've probably heard of. Patrick Floyd Pat Garrett.
Yes.
In November 1880, the sheriff of Lincoln County, New Mexico, resigned, and the county appointed Pat Garrett, a man well known for his skills with a gun, as his replacement. A former saloon owner, Garrett was charged with tracking down an old acquaintance from his barkeeping days. 21-year-old Hidry McCarty had escaped from prison and was said to have murdered as many men as years he'd lived. There's you a nice round number. McCarty was better known then and now as Billy the Kid. New Mexico Governor Lew Wallace offered a $500 reward for kids' capture after a bloody game of cat and mouse in which members of the kids' gang were gradually killed or arrested by Garrett. The lawman finally did in the outlaw, ambushing him in the dark and killing him with a single blast from his Sharps rifle. Garrett never received the reward as it was conditional of Billy being captured, not killed. To this day, there are still those who maintain that Billy the Kid did not die that night and that Garrett staged the whole thing so that his old friend could disappear once and for all.
It's like the movie Young Guns.
Yeah. Ralph Papa Thorson comes in at number four. Said to have apprehended more than 12,000 fugitives, Ralph Papa Thorson's life as a bounty hunter was a basis for Steve McQueen's final film, The Hunter, in 1980. Sometimes, using the somewhat eccentric method of utilizing astrological charts to locate criminals, Thorson also favored the use of non-lethal force in the form of his self-designed and built Prowler Fowler, which fired buckshot-filled beanbags at assailants.
Oh, they still use stuff like that.
Yeah, well, he developed it. He was killed in 1994 by a car bomb, presumed to have been placed by one of his more than 12,000 enemies he'd made during his career. And coming at number five, this is an interesting one. Domino Harvey. Domino Harvey was born in 1969 to actor Lawrence Harvey and fashion model Pauline Stone in England. Always a tomboy, Domino had an interest in martial arts and action figures, which was not shared by many of the other girls at her upper-class English boarding schools. Domino attended four such schools before being expelled from more than one for her unladylike conduct. Dropping out of education initially to pursue a career in modeling, Domino eventually found herself in the USA. In 1993, having unsuccessfully applied to the Los Angeles Fire Department, she enrolled in a short course to become a bail recovery agent or bounty hunter. Domino primarily went after drug dealers and thieves, but also tracked murderers during her time as a bounty hunter. She was incredibly good at her job and earned as much as $40,000 per year. Tragically, Domino became addicted to drugs and died of an overdose in 2005.
Hmm.
But I thought it was pretty interesting. I looked up a little bit further on her, and it said that she also collected swords and knives and kept AK-47s at her apartment as a bounty hunter in the mid-1990s. Harvey earned roughly $30,000 to $40,000 annually. The agency where she worked got 10% of the bail posted by each of the fugitives that they caught. She said she chose bounty hunting for the excitement of the work, even though it was not a high-paying job. She typically worked in Southern California, but on one occasion traveled across the United States to Atlanta, Georgia, to seek one of the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives. Harvey lived above the garage of her mother's home in Beverly Hills, California. After she began working as a bounty hunter, the Daily Mail published an article about her. Director Tony Scott read the article and contacted Harvey. They soon became friends and regularly visited each other. Scott spent time observing her while she tracked fugitives, and they ended up making a movie called Domino, and it starred Keira Knightley playing the part of her.
I thought a movie was called, there was a movie called that.
Yeah, I'd heard of the movie, but I didn't know what it was about. But it was about her, and it wasn't a blow-by-blow actual recount of her life, but it was based on her character. But it said in 2003, Harvey was arrested on charges of possession of crystal meth after sheriff's deputies found the drug at her home while investigating a burglar alarm. She pleaded guilty and attended a treatment program. Her arrest was consequently removed from her criminal record. In May 2005, Harvey was arrested on federal charges of trafficking meth again. She maintained that she was innocent. She spent 3 weeks in the Metropolitan Detention Center, Los Angeles. She posted $1 million bail and was placed under house arrest. Staying at her home in West Hollywood while under house arrest, Harvey wore an electronic monitoring ankle bracelet. They really felt she was a flight risk.
Yeah, she had the means.
It said she continually denied that she was a drug trafficker, claiming to have been set up. While under house arrest, she lived with a person whom she had hired as a sober guardian to help her refrain from drug use. However, on the night of June 27th, 2005, her aide discovered her unconscious in her bath. She was taken to a hospital but could not be resuscitated, and they determined that she had overdosed on the painkiller drug fentanyl.
Mm. Fentanyl's bad news.
Yeah, it sure is. But that was not what I was expecting when I was looking up famous bounty hunters, to only know one of them.
Yeah.
Dog wasn't listed in there.
Neither was Boba Fett.
No, Boba Fett wasn't in there either. And the Star Wars has been around since...
Ig 88 wasn't there?
Yeah, something like that. So, you know, you'd think that it would have been in there.
Well, that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs.
Legal briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal terms that we talked about. And this one I'm going to ask you, this should be an easy one. You're up to speed on all these.
Okay.
What does the term abscond mean?
That means you run away.
That's right. And when somebody jumps bail or jumps bond, they're essentially absconding.
They're absconding.
That's right. What would you look for if you were going to grant somebody bond or bail as a judge?
I would look for their...
There's a bunch of things, so give me what you think is most important.
Well, I would think, first of all, what I think the likelihood is that they're going to show back up for the next trial. So I would base that on drug use and their veracity and what the crime, what the outcome of the sentence might be if they're found guilty, and their connections to the community and their money situation and things like that.
Yeah, and the one that I always hark on whenever I'm arguing this is ties to the community. Judge, my client has such ties to this community. Look at this. This client's mother is sitting right here crying in the front row. He's not going anywhere. He just wants to be with his mama.
That's right. He's a mama's boy.
Meanwhile, everybody else is sitting there, and the rest of the prisoners look at him. Oh, look at this mama's boy.
Wait till we get him in there. Yeah.
What is a surety?
A surety. That means something that you pay to make sure that something's going to happen, to assure that it will happen.
And in the context of a bail or bond, it would be a bondsperson who would be the surety to make sure that you appear.
That's right, with either money or property.
Well, the bondsman's not going to give up their own property for you. What they're going to do is they're going to...
Take yours.
What the bondsman's going to do is take a down payment, like a percentage of it, and then post the full bond.
That's right.
Now, there could be a surety in the form of a piece of property, but that would be usually a relative or a friend that would do something like that. So that in that case, the surety would be the piece of property. Now, what is an OR or a PR bond?
That's own recognizance or personal recognizance.
And what is that?
That means that you don't have to pay anything, that you just got to keep an eye on yourself and make sure you show up.
And
they trust you that much.
And do you think that's a good thing?
Well, if you make the right choice, if the guy disappears, that was probably a bad thing.
And the last question, which amendment to the U.S. Constitution provides excessive bail shall not be required?
I will pick number 8.
Correct. You are correct, sir. You got 100%. I think you could be a bounty hunter.
You know, even a blind hog can find an acre now and then.
Is that how the saying goes?
I think so. So I might as well. I think I might go be a bounty hunter. I like being a repo man. So yeah. It's kind of the same thing. I'll just repossess people's butts.
If you're repossessing people's butts, you better get some of those paper towels.
Better bring the rest of them along with it.
What are they called? Bounty?
Or I could just be like the guy that brought back the Espinosa brothers. Put their heads in a sack and bring them back.
I don't think you have the demeanor for that.
That rhymes. I put the heads in a sack and I brought them right back. That's how you do it.
That's going to be your jingle?
Yep. That's about my commercials. That's how they'll run.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine podcasts.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thoughts. Today's random thought is my mother. As some of you may have known if you saw the Facebook page, my mother passed away last week. So that's been weighing heavy on my mind. And what I wanted to do to share the person my mother was with the rest of you is to read you the eulogy that I read at her funeral. This will make you sad, then please stop now. But I really think it's a celebration of the person that she was. I am proud to say my mother was Jody G. Smurl. I have spent my entire life being Jody Smurl's son. I know that sounds odd and obvious, but what I mean by that is, whenever somebody meets me, they always ask, "Smurl, any relation to Jody Smurl?" Of course I say, "Yes, that's my mother." Some have a kind story to tell about why they know her, and others would simply say, "I don't know why, but I know that name." For someone with such humble beginnings, she made quite a name for herself. My mom grew up in Mobile, Alabama. Without going into a lot of details, she had to overcome a lot of obstacles that might have derailed the life of a lot of people. She met my dad at Auburn University, and they married in 1955. Dad went to work for the C&O Railroad, and they moved them from Alabama to South Charleston, West Virginia in 1957. I came along in 1958, and then they moved to Huntington in about 1960, and my brother was born in 61. Except when my dad got transferred somewhere for a year or two here or there, they have been in Huntington ever since. Mom decided to run for the West Virginia House of Delegates in 1966. So she had only lived in town for 6 years at that point. She had spent most of her time taking care of two small boys. She was a woman, which in those days, women just stayed home and tended to the house. They didn't go and run for the house. As if that wasn't enough of the odds stacked against her, she was a Republican. The West Virginia government in those days was about 80% Democrats and 20% Republicans. Even with all that against her, she won election on her very first try. She became the only Republican woman in the House and one of only 5 women overall. She would go on to serve 20 years over about the next 40, having been elected the first time in 1966 and retiring at the end of her final session in 2004. My mom would not have liked the politics of today. I know I may be biased, but she was involved in government for the right reasons. Not for the money, not for the recognition, and not to maintain some party line. She was there to help people. She took calls all hours of the day and night from people who wanted her to help with roads or policies or laws or whatever. She was a servant of the people. People that weren't even in her district would call her because they couldn't reach their own representative. Mom tried to help anyone that asked. Her reasoning was, everyone should do what is right. She always wanted what was fair. I think that probably went back to her childhood situation, but she never said that. Mom expected everyone to be accountable. She was never the kind of mother that said, "Oh, my son wouldn't do that." To the contrary, if she heard there was some type of incident, she would say, "Where's Tommy?" As an example, myself and 3 other neighborhood 8-year-old boys had a small incident. My brother Danny was tagging along too, but as he said throughout the entire thing, "It was no fair. I never got a turn." One kid had a BB gun, and the new I-64 ran right through our backyard. So we thought it would be fun to lay in the weeds on the hill overlooking the interstate and shoot BBs at the passing cars. "Won't it break windows?" I asked. "Nah, it's not powerful enough." That was the wisdom of one of the other 8-year-olds. "Good enough for me." So we passed the gun back and forth, taking shots at the cars and hearing a nice crisp ping sound whenever we hit one. We ignored Danny's repeated pleas of, "My turn, hey, no fair, it's my turn," until one of my shots went tonk instead of ping. The car wavered in the road a little and then pulled off on the shoulder. We weren't sure what had happened, but we figured discretion was the better part of valor and took off running. As luck would have it, the ladies in the car came to our house to use the phone and call the police because some kids had shot the passenger window out of their car and could have killed someone. After they left to go back to their car and meet the state police, my mom went out into the neighborhood to find me. She found four boys plus one smaller one, which matched the lady's description. I don't really remember the conversation, but I'm sure we tried to deny involvement at first, but Jody had already solved this crime. She said to all five of us, "Go to our house and get in the car." As we were being herded to the car, we passed another neighborhood kid that had been in no way involved in this incident. He said, "What's going on?" Mom said, "You come get in the car too, Mike. You could probably use this." She loaded us all up in her car and drove us to the closest state police barracks and turned us in. We thought we were looking at hard times, so imagine our relief when we just got yelled at for a while. But could you imagine a mother doing that in this day and age, taking their own kids to the police? But it was the right thing to do. She wanted us to take responsibility for our actions. She was always all about doing what was right. Another example came when she was in the legislature. She had helped a prisoner get married while he was in prison. I don't remember all the circumstances around it, but for some reason she had to get involved in her official capacity for it to happen. The couple was very grateful for her help. However, a short time later, this guy managed to somehow escape from prison. The wife called Mom in the middle of the night, hysterical, about the situation. Mom just got up, got dressed, and went to pick her up and told her to find out where he was. We are going to get him. And they did. She was outraged that she helped this guy out and he would have the nerve to then turn around and escape. That just wasn't fair, and it made her look bad because she had helped him. She went to where he was hiding out on her own and basically lectured him until he agreed to turn himself in. She loaded him in her car and drove him to the police station without any regard for her own safety. People said they couldn't believe she got him to turn himself in. Danny and I could. If he had to sit through the same lectures as we did when we did something wrong, he gladly turned himself in. Jody was also very tenacious. If she really wanted something done, she would fight to the very end and do whatever it took to correct this problem. She was also very resourceful. When I was in junior high school, she took me with her to New York for us to watch Marshall's basketball team play in the NIT at Madison Square Garden. This was on a Sunday night, and since the legislature was in session, she was expected back at the Capitol on Monday morning. But we missed our plane back that night, and there were no other alternatives until the next day. So Jody jumped right into action to solve this dilemma. She called the governor, which I think was Arch Moore at the time, and explained the situation and invoked some little-known rule of law that has to do with the state assisting getting delegates back to the House for voting reasons, if they have problems getting there. So our governor's staff reached out to the other states involved, and they set up a relay of state troopers from each state that would drive us to the border of the next state and meet a state trooper there from that state, and so on and so forth until they drove us from New York City to Huntington, West Virginia, in the back of state police cars. Boy, did I have a story that next day at school. My mom loved going to the beach, and we went pretty much every year of my life until she just couldn't go anymore. She was a staunch supporter of Marshall University. She spent some time rooting for Auburn, too, but she bled green, just like several of us Smurls. She also fought to get Marshall better funding in a time when they were getting greatly shortchanged by the state. It seemed most in state government only recognized that other university up north as the only university. Again, it was a matter of fairness. Both universities deserve equal funding. My mom never shied away from letting you know exactly what she thought. She couldn't hide it if she didn't like you or something you did. I am guilty of that as well. She was never afraid to jump in the car and drive anywhere. She often traveled to where my dad may have been moved by the railroad, hauling two small boys in tow, and never thought a thing of it. She did have a little bit of a heavy foot, as we got stopped for speeding several times when we were in the car with her. One time in particular, she was taking me to a doctor's appointment, and I guess we were running late as usual, and the police pulled her over. While they were discussing the violation, some kid that happened to be in his yard nearby walked up to me and said, "Hey, what did she do?" I said, "I'm not sure." He said, "I'll bet she was littering." 5-year-old me grew very indignant and replied loudly back at this strange kid, "My mom would never litter. Governor Barron says don't litter, and she would never litter. But she might have been speeding. She always speeds. My dad tells her all the time that she's going to get caught. And then I looked up and saw the policeman and my mom both staring at me. And she said, shut up, Tommy. My mom participated in more clubs than I have time to list. She was always very involved. One of her most passionate endeavors was GOP Youth Camp. She was an administrator and counselor for years and created a great experience for many teenagers. While it was a GOP camp, it was more about learning about government than anything to do with becoming a Republican, and she felt everyone should know how and why government operates and was doing her part to cultivate an informed electorate. One other favorite activity that I know she really loved was the old capers. This was started by the now-defunct Women's Club of Huntington, and as I remember, it was a fundraiser they staged every year at the Keith Albee and basically put on a variety show. I remember it always being packed. It was kind of embarrassing at the time as a kid to see your mom performing in dances and songs and skits on stage, but it must have rubbed off on me somewhere, as my wife and I have spent over 20 years working in theater productions in Huntington with kids and adults, as well as directing the Huntington Area Regional Theater. What happened to my mom over the last 5 years has been very unfair. For a woman that was so sharp, well-spoken, and tireless in her efforts to help others, it has been hard to see her slowly go. For a person that was always talking and always communicating and always so animated, she has spent the last 5 years in almost total silence, not able to answer a question or finish a sentence without losing her train of thought. I knew she was in there, but she, the real Jody Smurl, couldn't get out. During the last 5 years, a lot of people asked me if she had passed because they hadn't seen her or anything. I usually answered, she is still alive, but my mom is gone. I wish during that time I could have had one more lucid day with her to talk to her about her. I wanted her to know that she was a good mom and how much I admired the person she was, and most of all, that she was loved. That lucid day never came, though, so instead I would just settle for a smile now and then. I hope she knew how respected she was and how much she was loved. Even though I am an old guy now, I will miss having my mother around. I love you, Mom. This has been Tommy's Random Thoughts.